So you need to sit down at the founder level and C level and understand, why do customers buy? And that's key. So if you have a repeatable motion of understanding why someone's going to buy, what is the value that you bring to them, and why are, what do people like or and not like about your tool? That understanding really early on, getting those initial customers, is extremely important. But what's more important is taking the time to listen to what they're saying and have conversations with them.
You're looking to grow your B2B business? Welcome to the Grow B2B Faster podcast. Here, we dig deep to learn proven growth strategies, hacks, and tools from top CEOs and leaders in sales and marketing to help you grow faster. This episode is powered by Sewoo, the company that can help you drive thought leadership, hiring, and sales for your B2B business via LinkedIn. Check them out on sewoo.io, S-A-W-O-O.io.
Today we have Michelle Peach, founding partner of Minot Light Consulting, as our guest. Michelle, welcome to our show.
Thanks for having me.
So,
I'm excited.
Yeah, me too, definitely. It's going to be an interesting conversation because on the one hand, you're an entrepreneur now. On the other hand, you are a seasoned go-to-market leader. So before founding Minot Light Consulting, you had several leading sales roles. And at startups and scale-ups, can you guide us a little bit through the journey that you had and the roles that you had over time?
Yeah, absolutely. I have always worked at early stage startups. I started my career at a really early stage startup called Applause as a BDR, and I worked my way through the trenches up to an inside sales leader, and then got majority of my experience building and scaling sales teams at Datadog, where I started super early on there in 2013 when there were three sales reps and we were still trying to figure out the motion. But as you know, Datadog's very successful. They had a perfect PLG situation going on. And then, you know, the sales team started to see early success. So I built out the sales team at Datadog through multiple different stages within the organization and eventually ended up having close to 100 sales reps on the inside sales team while I was building and scaling at Datadog for 4 years. I then went to do that again at Drift and Dooley. So very similar stages, anywhere between seed to Series A is when I typically get started. And then the focus area is building out that go-to-market function and those customer-facing teams. So I've had years of experience doing that. And I love building in the early stages and then watching the success of the organization. So I've had the pleasure of doing that at a couple of companies recently.
And it seems that you like this because it's not an easy stage to start with a company. So that's a really tough one. Figuring out everything from the start and so on. Yeah,
it's not easy. A lot of people call me crazy after going back to do it again. But I think I am done doing that and have focused more on helping many first-time founders as opposed to just one. So,
Yeah. So tell me about your new company, Minot Light Consulting. How do you say it? Minot Light Consulting?
It's actually Minot Light, and it is a lighthouse in the town that my business partner and I live in, Scituate, Mass. And there's also a beach. And my business partner, Niche, asked me at the beginning of the summer if I would be interested in, doing our own thing, because Niche has also seen the story at startups, scaling those customer-facing teams. He was at Klaviyo, PostScript, and Drift as well. And the two of us have a passion for building and scaling early stage and have seen the story many times. And it's important to see that story, what to do and what not to do. And we've had so many themes across these years of doing it where we felt as though we can provide our services to many first-time founders or, you know, early stage organizations based off of all of the experiences that we've seen. We also know that what we've seen in the past, go-to-market teams are typically siloed at this stage where there's lack of focus and understanding of how to take this motion to the next level, whether it's another round of funding or an acquisition, IPO and whatnot. So we said, let's do this. Let's meet with many founders all at once and provide them our services to help them scale, as opposed to just getting in the trenches again. So here we are, and we have had a lot of success early on. We just started. We're working more specifically at seed to series B with founders directly.
Mm-hmm. So who's your ideal customer besides the stage of the company? Does it have to be a product-led growth company, or what are the tick boxes that someone has to tick to say, okay, now that's me. I have to talk to Michelle and partner.
Yeah, I obviously seed with a little bit of funding, but more specifically B2B SaaS companies that are looking to scale. And it's not necessarily building out a sales team or your go-to-market team. It is really how you can set that core foundation, which a lot of people lack early on. So how do you build that foundation that you have confidence at the C-level, you have a pretty good understanding of where to take the team. So, you know, we work with B2B SaaS companies, product-led, not product-led, no marketing. It is really all over the map because there are typically two different founders, right? So there's a founder that is a tech founder who's building the product. And then there's a founder who's a sales founder who can do a great job selling and pitching. But when it comes to actually leading and building an organization, on the product side, doesn't necessarily have that knowledge. And the same thing on the product side, they don't have the experience, or they don't want to have the experience to get on sales calls. So there's two different pillars that we work for. And it's really looking underneath the hood to start and understanding what's your value, what is your value proposition to your customers, why are people buying, and going deep and asking some pretty open-ended discovery questions with some of these founders. We understand that a lot of them need help with that initial foundation and goal setting and whatnot before we focus on that go-to-market function.
Okay, very good. Do you have a geographical focus?
Not necessarily, no. We're both on the East Coast, right outside of Boston. So, you know, we work early mornings our time, and then we have West Coast customers as well. So we're working broad area.
Mm-hmm. But the United States?
Typically United States. Have had conversations with, you know, some London organizations.
Okay, very good, very good. So you had many companies basically from almost no sales team to scaling to very, very big sales team. What are the big stages or milestones in building a successful go-to-market strategy and the corresponding things you have to do, be it sales team or other things you have to keep in mind? If you can guide us like on a very high level first, and then we can go a little bit deeper, what you do typically for an early stage seed company and how this changes over from seed to series A to series B.
Yeah, that's a great question. Every company is different. So you need to sit down at the founder level and C level and understand why do customers buy? And that's key. So if you have a repeatable motion of understanding why someone's going to buy, what is the value that you bring to them, and what do people like and not like about your tool, that understanding really early on, getting those initial customers is extremely important. But what's more important is taking the time to listen to what they're saying and have conversations with them. Once you understand, okay, this can be pretty repeatable, I know the messaging, I know our core persona, and not a lot of people do, then you start to think about your go-to-market motion. And that can be, how can you make this repeatable so people buy the product and take it into the market? But you have to peel back a lot of layers of the onion in order to understand when to do that. And early seed is getting those initial customers and listening to what they're saying. And not a lot of founders actually listen to those calls. You'd be surprised. They're not actually digging deeper into the core value proposition of their product. So understanding your core value proposition and making that a repeatable motion to acquire customers is extremely important. So once you get a handful of customers, you're selling on your own. You should be at the founder level. When do you hire your first sales rep? And that is when you start to see some repeatable motion on the customer side. And I wouldn't go hire a first-time sales leader at this stage. I would hire probably an account executive, but don't expect the account executive to put that playbook together. So having some understanding regarding what questions to ask on the discovery side, understanding why these customers bought in the first place, then you can start with a pretty high level foundation. And then from there, once you start to see repeatable success on the account executive side, then you consider building out a sales team. But I caution you not to build out a sales team really early on with, you know, 5-6 sales reps. Start with one or two. And then another thing is, don't go hire an SVP of sales so early on, because it needs to be the right person. Are they willing to roll up their sleeves? Are they going to get in the trenches? Are they the right person at this stage? And that's something that is really key. So those milestones align with what your goals are. And if someone you hire is more from an enterprise motion and very process driven, then it's probably not the right time to hire that person. So I think anywhere between C to A is when you start to consider those core hiring milestones, but it's really important to nail a couple of customers first.
Mm-hmm. So should you hire the first one? So first question, I have a couple of questions here. So should you hire one or two account executives? Because I also heard that it could be beneficial to have two, just to be able to compare and to have some competition, so to say. And if you only hire one and this one fails, you don't know if it's a person or if it's a process. What is your take on that?
Yes, exactly. You took the words right out of my mouth. I would do two. And to your exact point, if it doesn't work out, startups early stage are not for everyone. And 9 times out of 10, that first 2 or 3 hires, one of them is bound to say, this isn't for me. This isn't the stage that's right for me. Those individuals need to be builders. So they will be putting together the email cadences, the messaging, the personas. So that is why you want at least two early on. But that profile is really important. Are they willing to roll up their sleeves, and can they work in an agile environment? And that is because sales is always difficult to begin with, but the organization will pivot multiple times over the next, 6 to 9 months as you're scaling and building.
Yeah. So it's not a traditional, as I understood, account executive that just receives basically the conversations, just hops in and says, yeah, cool, now we do a demo. It's someone who also has to do the reach out. So basically it's 2-in-1, the sales development rep who creates the leads and the account executive who has the calls. So it's a lot in one position. How do you find that person? What do you look for if first of all trying to find them and then doing the interview process?
Oh, that's a great question. So it's typically your network, and someone that may have seen the story before, or you can take a chance on someone that has never done it before, but has the idea around a building mentality. So how you build. And I typically like to use my network because I'm lucky I have worked in the startup world. So I have individuals in my network that can point me to maybe more of a junior individual with a year or two of experience, depending on what you're selling. But we know that they have a pretty proven track record of being heads down and having the ability to not have that process and clear playbook. But by not having the playbook, they're okay with it and they're willing to actually start to create it. And it's really about that core network that you have, using any advisors that you have or investors and board members that might have seen a successful rep at a previous early stage startup. And then the interview process, I encourage going through many different stages. And this is the thing that I've seen happen a few times where a founder really likes the person because the person really likes the founder, or they really like the tool, and they don't dig deep enough. And founders are in C-level, they don't have the time, so they typically don't really want to get involved in that interview process, but it's extremely important to take the time and dig deeper, do the initial, culture fit, sales skills. I would probably have them do some type of project where they're building on their own. So if you were to give them a persona based off of what you may or may not know that you would reach out to, write me an email cadence for this persona. How would you try and do an outbound campaign? And that gets them to think about who they're selling to. It gives you an idea of their writing style, their creativeness. Are they willing to do it? How do they think about starting this from nothing? And then do reference checks, and you dig deeper for the scalability and their ability to work in an agile environment. You can test on the sales skills during the phone calls, but it's really, can they manage an agile environment? Will they be able to be on their own and go through many changes at any given point?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very good. And very hands-on advice here. I mean, can you give us one or two like really hands-on key questions that you say you would have to ask those in such a, like what are one of the two or three things you should never miss during the whole basically selecting process?
Yeah, culture. So I think it's really important for the founder and C-level that is starting this organization to understand what the culture is. So that's homework for the founder. What type of culture do you want to have? And then you identify some key questions to understand if they're a culture fit. So at my previous organization, we had a no jerk mentality. Like we did not want any jerks, and you can test for that. If they're a good human being, right? So that was one thing that was super, super important to us. Other people don't care about it, but we tested for that. And it was really early on in the conversation to see, you know, what do they like to do outside of work, and how passionate were they, and understanding some passion projects and what gets them excited. And you test their energy level. And I typically like to ask, what's your biggest challenge in your current role today? Or what was a challenge that you have ran into, and how have you handled that? And it's not your biggest weakness, it's a challenge. And you'd be surprised early on, someone would say, well, my comp plan keeps changing and I can't figure out my comp plan. And, you know, we're really early stage, so there's no process and my comp keeps changing. Well, that's a red flag, because you're hiring early stage and this person can't handle the comp changing a few times over the course of a year, or they can't handle the process or lack thereof. Red flag. I immediately remove them from the interview process. Mm-hmm. There are a couple different things that you can test for there. Culture and their ability to handle change is extremely important.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Would you go for the first one, two are account executives, or would you first hire someone who helps you with marketing to basically get this whole inbound lead engine going?
I would go marketing first. And the reason for that is, you need to understand the brand awareness. But there's a key thing there. I wouldn't go for someone that's just focused on brand. They have to understand a true marketing funnel and the ability to stand up a true marketing funnel. So when the time comes, what is a PQL? What is an MQL? Have they done that before? Have they stood up an inbound motion? Brand is one thing. So starting there, getting your brand out there, making sure that, you know, it resonates with your core ICP, which you probably don't even know your core ICP yet, but that marketing individual will help build that. And the brand's there, and then that initial marketing funnel. So tell me what our lead forecast should be. What do you think it could look like in the next 3 to 6 months? Our summer months are low. What are some strategies that you think that we could make up that gap? And that's really important early on. But I would do marketing to start to understand more about the brand awareness piece and what resonates. You'd be surprised, certain colors of your site might not be attractive to your core persona and your messaging. And those are things that are really important to try and understand early on before you have those sales reps getting on calls and wasting all their time and energy that doesn't necessarily work for, you know, your core persona that you're trying to reach. Also, outbound is extremely difficult, and it could take anywhere to 6 to 9 months to start to see traction from an outbound cold campaign So if you don't have some type of inbound motion before you hire those account executives, those AEs are going to be doing straight outbound. And that is a lot. So you might not necessarily see success immediately. And at this early stage, you want to see success immediately. You don't have 6 to 9 months. And also outbound is a very large of it is a trial and error, trying to figure out what messaging and cadence sticks with your ICP and whatnot. So there's a lot of different variables, but I think in understanding an inbound and establishing an inbound motion early on is extremely important.
Mm-hmm. Very good. So we let's say check, we hire the early marketing person, check, we hire the two AEs. It worked out. What comes next?
Operations, an ops person. And so many people put that on the back burner until you start to have a large sales team, a large marketing team, but data is extremely important. And not even having the data in one place will put you back a couple of months when the time comes. So understanding all of that top of funnel motion, how many leads are coming in, and then bringing that back into how many, whether it's a demo, let's just say it's a demo sale. So leads to demo, the conversion rate to pipeline to close. Who's looking at that right now, early on? No one. And without operations, you don't know what that repeatable sales motion will look like and that customer journey on the customer side as well. So getting it into a CRM, understanding the metrics and the data, it does not need to be perfect. You don't need to look at a ton. But one mistake I always see is early on not looking at that data. And until you have it in front of you, you're kind of going blind and you're going with gut. And then you start to build out a sales team and here you have 8 people and you don't understand your entire customer journey, but you have no data, you have no metrics. How do you make that a repeatable process? Also gives you indications of when to hire, when to stop hiring. And, you know, it brings it back to my previous comment about building that core foundation. You want to have data and metrics early on so you can build that foundation and be confident with where you're going. More data, the better.
Mm-hmm. So we hire the ops person that is, and for people who don't know what an ops person is doing, can you quickly summarize? So it's all about data, understood, but what is like the key job of an ops person?
Yeah. So typically, sales operations or rev ops, they will focus on building out those initial dashboards in your CRM, looking at the tech stack. Will help facilitate compensation plans, will look at a financial model, look at all of the aspects of the business to help us forecast, which is extremely important. Early on, you don't really have much of a pipeline. You don't understand what your sales cycles will look like and how many touches to a lead. And all of those key points of data are extremely important. But more importantly is the forecast, right? Because you just got a round of funding. And you need to understand what your forecast looks like and how to build pipeline. So that operations person should be able to help you there so you can have a little bit more confidence in the runway and the forecast that you have to build or the pipeline you have to build to hit that forecast.
Mm-hmm. Very good. So let's assume we have this website person too. What comes next?
Probably a sales leader. Depending on the sales motion, a sales leader and potentially a BDR motion. BDRs could report to marketing or sales. If you have a pretty large influx of inbound leads that are generating enough pipeline, then you might not need a BDR that early on, but consider it an outbound motion relatively soon. But I would do a sales leader as well, because it's great for the founder to manage a couple of AEs for a little bit of time. But again, it depends on that founder. And the founder really needs to be focused on running the business and making sure the product is where it needs to be. And managing salespeople isn't easy. And especially if you don't have that sales experience, then you could potentially hinder the sales motion and those sales reps might not want to work for you for very long term. So hiring that sales leader. But identifying the right fit sales leaders is not easy.
So how would you do that?
I think they need to be a builder, and they need to understand what it takes to build from the ground up, and those early foundations on the sales side too. So again, to the operation side, what does our pipeline look like? What's our mechanisms to generate pipeline? What is our strategy? Someone that is going to be able to think about that and has seen the story of building before. And it's not necessarily building a new sales team within a very established organization where there's already a lot of process. It's building where there is no process and you're trying to figure it out in real time. It's not going to be perfect, but that individual needs to be able to understand the building mentality. And while you're building, you have a lot of pressure to hit early numbers and a lot of interviewing and a lot of hiring. And on top of all of that, you're getting in the trenches, you're on sales calls, you're coaching. So someone that has the ability to really manage a lot of things at once.
Mm-hmm. So how do you find that person best, in your opinion?
I would ask your investors or your network, your board members, who have they seen, any previous successes in their portfolio companies where there might be a sales leader who's looking, using advisors that you have, building that advisory board. Someone within your network probably knows someone. And that's how I've gotten all of my VP of sales roles, is because someone in my network worked with me previously and, you know, understood that I have that experience of building.
Yeah. That's very interesting. So it's really important also as a founder and from a founder's perspective to work on your network.
Yes. Yes. So that's not easy. not a lot of people like to network, right? It's hard. It's essentially you're outbound prospecting, you're going cold in your network at the founder level.
Yeah. But I also have really good experience with just asking, and also like going through your own network and seeing loose connections and just asking. And I'm really surprised positively by the people that are willing to work with you, even without receiving anything. Sometimes it's for them. Most of them are really accomplished already. A few thousand euros, a few percent of your company don't matter for them. It's more about being in the game and having some fun. At least that's what I see. I mean, of course, you give them something, but it's not for most of them. It's not about monetary incentives anymore. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. And typically when you are in early stage or you're a founder who building, you start to build that network of very similar profile individuals. And a lot of people are willing to help at this stage because they've seen the story before, or they're in it right now. So they understand the value of having a solid network and having someone that you can confidently turn to ask for advice is really important. Again, not in it, you don't pay them or get anything in return. It's just something that people do in this entrepreneurial world, I think is key.
Yeah, absolutely. So now we got a sales leader, we got two AEs, maybe one business development rep and a head of sales. What comes next?
Depends on the motion. So you probably have already a customer success person in there as well, depending on your onboarding motion. Is it a PLG where they're onboarded on their own relatively quickly? You don't need that person immediately. Do they need it to be onboarded? Do you need to make sure that they're healthy and activated and there's virality? Then you have that CS person too. You want someone there to make sure that the customers are using the tool the right way, you have adoption. If you're having trouble with adoption early on, then hire that customer success or customer facing person that's going to actually walk them through that that journey. So it just depends on your tool, but you don't want to see churn either. So think about that role relatively early on as well, and making sure that you have a pretty solid understanding of what your customer journey looks like. And most people don't. Most people have no idea where they lose a customer or what their activation metric is or why the adoption isn't there and how to make it viral. That is extremely important to continue to scale.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, makes absolute sense. It's very expensive to win a client. So
exactly.
you shouldn't lose them, or you should in fact expand within a client. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And you don't want that client to churn and take it out into their network and say, well, you know what, this tool just really didn't do it for us. So you have very little room for error early on in that sense. But those core customers are also going to help you build that initial foundation as well, and making sure you understand the value that they see. And if they do end up churning, why? And how can you improve? And how can you make that a big learning on your end to not have that happen again?
Mm-hmm. Very good. So what would be the next stage then?
The next stage, you hope to see some type of repeatable motion on the customer facing side, right? And that is top of funnel all the way down to closed deals. So what does your top of funnel look like? Do you have enough leads that are feeding your small sales team at this point? Do you understand your capacity model at this stage to hire, continue to hire? Or if you're starting to see repeatable success, the customers are coming in, you know, you have very little churn, then you go for that next round, whatever it is. I think early on is setting those goals. So you'd be surprised, a lot of early founders have no idea what their goals are. So I think you need to understand pretty early, like, what is that next step? What's that next level that you're trying to get to? Whether it's 25 net new customers. Do you have that repeatable motion to get to 25 net new customers? What happens after 25 new customers? Do you hire two more sales reps? So understanding that initial motion and model will help you have a clearer understanding of what's next. So a lot of factors go into that. Are you seeing repeatable success? That's a great sign. That could be another round. That could be more additional hires. That could be hiring a content person on the marketing side, because you identify some key areas that are successful for lead gen, like a blog post or a podcast or whatever it is. I think it's like taking a step back and peeling back the layers of the onion of understanding what's working right now and what's not working. And whatever is working, let's try and make that repeatable. But also, how can we like 10x that going forward?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it sounds really logical in a sense. Yeah. And I'm a mathematician by trade, so I like your whole approach of it's all about metrics, numbers. You have to set goals, you have to measure. And then it becomes less a gut feeling game and more like a playbook that you can execute on, so to say.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And with that, making sure everyone in the organization early understands why those metrics are the metrics that have been put in place and how do we get there? And that's something that a lot of people lack, and or you have no idea. The metrics can be completely off base, but as long as you have something that you're running towards and then you're learning along the way and you're looking at those metrics and those goals that you're trying to hit on a weekly, quarterly, monthly, quarterly basis. Obviously long-term goals, but also very short-term goals as well to make sure that you can have time to pivot if it's not working.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a special system that you favor? I mean, I know OKRs, I heard of V2MOM. Is there anything that you favor?
I personally think it's a blend of a number of those different frameworks and methodologies. It's just understanding if it's a revenue target, what do you need to do to get to that revenue? So how much pipeline do you need? And then the activities that go into generating that pipeline on the both sales and marketing side. It could be a net new logo acquisition. Why is it new logos? You take a look at that. Same again, it starts with top of funnel. How many people are coming? How many people are converting? And what needs to happen in between? But it's never going to be perfect. And it won't be perfect even at, you know, Series B, Series C. You're still trying to evaluate. But as long as you have something that you're running towards and a clear understanding of how you're going to get there, with also the understanding that you're going to pivot and change along the way too.
Yeah. Yeah. I can very much understand and feel it, because we are also a startup doing the whole process right now, still in the founder-led sales, but we see repeatability now. So slowly getting into this area. That's why I also have very concrete questions here, because I feel the pain. And I also wonder, what is the next step? Whom should I hire next? And so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. So thanks a lot already for this advice, Michelle. Yeah. That was helpful. For your own company, I'm curious. So now it's a consulting company, not a SaaS company. You never know where you're going to go. I've seen consulting companies turn into subscription models and something SaaS-like. But how do you see your own company's stage, and where do you want to go?
That's a great question. To be honest, our first hire will be an operations person. Mm-hmm. And that person will be to help us internally understand, you know, what, how many networking calls do we need? How many inbound leads do we need in order to generate enough revenue? But also we provide the services for you at this stage. So you're getting an entire go-to-market function for essentially 80% less of the cost that you would to hire a full-time person. So those services of that operations person is really important, like I mentioned. So that operations person that we hire will be also servicing our customers as well to help them mm-hmm. initially build out those core metrics and the mechanisms in order to track them. Mm-hmm. That's right now in the next 6 months. Long term, we do see ourselves becoming some type of software. And it's really like a health and gut check metric, diagnostic, deep dive into what you have, what you don't have, with some type of, you know, potential crowdsourcing piece to it that provides early stage founders with all of these resources in order to set that foundation to be successful.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Very good. I've got two things that come to mind that may be interesting for you. So on the one hand, we have our second podcast for Leaders in Consulting, your consulting company. So we mm-hmm. interviewed Greg Alexander. He built up a 30-person consultancy, which sounds small, but he focused on getting VPs of sales on board and helped B2B companies ramp up and improve their sales processes. Mm-hmm. And so he hired really, really, really expensive people. His compensation was also in parts based on success metric.
Yeah.
So in the end, he could achieve 30 million revenue with 30 people, 50 million EBITDA, US dollar, mm-hmm. and sold it for 160 million. So
that's amazing.
So it sounds like you have a not similar play. You have different target group, but similar know-how, so to say. You go into companies as very seasoned VPs of sales. You help them build up something. So that could be interesting for you to listen to.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll take a listen for sure. That'd be really helpful. Yeah.
And the other one that I see is consultancies that have, and you go into the right direction. Not that you need my advice now, but I talk to a lot of partners of consultancies, so maybe I just give it along now. Is that consultancies that have some repeatable sales motion, mm-hmm. not sales motion, they productize their business, so to say. And then, I don't know if you know force management.
Yes.
It's a Yeah. So basically John Kaplan, will come on our show again. He was already there for a year ago. And now, he will be here again. And they built, a coaching program and community around what they do. To build a product that is a repeatable, that offers them repeatability in sales, so to say, and in revenue.
Right.
And then you can build a sales team on top of that, and you don't need the expert VP like you to go into sales, but you have a product that you can sell, and then you can do everything that you did for other companies for yourself.
Exactly. Exactly. We're looking to scale this, right? Everyone wants to scale.
Yeah, no, that sounds really good. That sounds really good. I'm rooting for you.
Very cool, Michelle.
So we went through the whole process of what you have to do from founder. Let's say you're the only person doing all that stuff to you first have to hire the first team members up mm-hmm. to, okay, now you have a repeatable process and you basically, of course, still learning, but from CLC onwards, you have the right VPs in place for marketing, for sales, for RevOps, for whatnot. Customer success, we also talked about. And so that's basically when you probably hand over and say, okay, now you're big enough. Now we did everything that we can do. And then you go to the next company, correct?
Yes. Yeah. For me specifically, I've seen it to, like I said, close to 100 reps. But at that point, it's a well-oiled machine.
Yeah, that's like big.
My job is done here. But that was Datadog. Datadog saw success pretty early on. I feel like the job is never done unless you get to that ultimate goal, whether it's acquisition or IPO. And everyone says, well, go IPO in 18 months, but you know it's not an easy feat. So it's usually some type of acquisition.
Yeah. I mean, if you get a successful exit, no matter how, it's good.
Exactly.
Nowadays, let's see. Yeah. In the current market conditions, we are in September 2022. Everybody thinks the world is ending. Stock markets are down, whatnot.
I know. It's scary, right? Just try and close some deals. That's what everyone's thinking right now.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, if you're like a seed or a Series A startup, it really shouldn't. I mean, it impacts how you maybe can fundraise right now. But yeah, it shouldn't impact your 5 to 10 year goal of going public, because then the world is totally different again.
And it will be drastically different. And also at this stage, what you're doing today is going to be different in 9 months too. It's a different product. It's a different pitch. There's a lot more variables as you're starting to scale.
Yeah, and what you said, it sounds so easy, yeah? But we also made a mistake, a hiring mistake in our own company, and I didn't correct it fast enough. So we hired a CTO, and that person thought, well, I just built it and that's it. Yeah? And then we had it in front of customers, first paying clients. And then, of course, we had feedback and we pivoted. And that person said, oh my God, now I have to do this whole thing again. We have to change this. So it was the wrong person with the wrong mindset. And if we would have like dug deeper in the interview process, we could have avoided this. And it cost us a lot of time now, equals
a lot
money.
Of time and money.
So it sounds so easy what you're saying, huh? But it's really, really, really tough.
Especially hiring early on is really tough, and making sure that they are in for a long haul, but also in for a lot of work. It's not easy. And I think most companies, not even just startups, they don't fire fast enough. And if you understand that this person's not going to be a good fit early on, you might as well just cut them fast, because it's a lot of time and money. And more specifically, if they're a bad culture fit, because that impacts everyone. When you're growing and you're really early on, that culture is extremely important, especially in a remote world too. So if you identify it, it's hard. It's extremely hard to obviously move on from someone, but get it done fast.
Yeah. Well, I could have needed you earlier here. I got really good over time firing people who are not a culture fit, but I was not good enough and being honest and setting goals. Maybe that was also my mistake, setting clear goals and say, you have to achieve this, or let's sit down. What do you want to achieve? What timeline we have? And then be honest to one another and say, okay, you repeatedly didn't hit what we plan to achieve. It's probably not the right fit for you. Mm-hmm. And it's better for it's better for everybody if we just end our relationship right now, right here, and you can still move on in a nice way. I mean, in the United States, it's different than in Europe most of the time.
Right.
In Europe, you have like a 3 month period, so everybody lands kind of soft. But depending on your company culture, you can still offer a soft landing for someone you let go.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it's not easy, but I think you're right about setting those goals, and those goals are really important early on. They're not going to be the right ones, but as long as you can articulate the why is really important, and also being transparent across the board. So at the C level, being as transparent as you feel comfortable, I think that trickles down to everyone. And on the customer facing side, if you set pipeline goals, or if you over forecast, having the ability to explain to yourself as a leader why you didn't hit those goals, being able to peel back a couple layers to understand what worked and what didn't work, what you can adjust. And then more importantly, being able to articulate it to C-level and the whole company. The whole company should understand pipeline goals, your forecast, how you're going to get there, what's broken. Being as transparent as possible is something that I've learned over the years, and not a lot of people do it early on.
So let's dig a little bit deeper here, because I'm curious. First of all, how openly would you share revenue goals, current revenue, the struggles, the things that of course go well? But I mean, that's easy to share if something goes well. You often don't hit something.
Right.
How often and how deep would you, what kind of metrics would you usually share with the whole company? And how would you do it and how often?
It depends on the cadence of the company. If you do company meetings, I think it's important to have at least 2 company meetings a month. I've done it weekly at my previous organizations, where you have set metrics that you share with a company. And usually sales leadership and C-level come to an agreement of what those core metrics are that they're going to share with the team. But it's also important to do a deep dive. So if you didn't hit pipeline, like take a step back and understand, well, what's generating pipeline? Okay. So you don't point fingers at marketing. Marketing inbound leads were down. This is just an example, 40%. But my sales team also didn't do anything to make up that gap. We had zero outbound activity. So it's being true and honest, but also showing how you get to that number. And some, what are those levers that need to be pulled in order to make up that gap? Or, you know, what are some things that you adjusted to make up the gap? And this is why you did it. And this is how you're tracking it. So instead of LinkedIn messages, we decided to pivot to video and email. And we saw an increase in, you know, X videos and an increase in open emails. It's just those key metrics, and being able to dig into those metrics and tell a story is important. I think it's important for the prod and eng teams and people that aren't on the customer facing side to understand what's happening on these customer calls too. For example, you know, okay, we lost 9 deals last quarter because of this UI issue. We have the concrete examples, and it's important for everyone to understand that it's not necessarily always on the sales tactic side. There could be something on the you know, prod side that they don't know about.
Yeah. So if you put together agenda points, high level, for such a company meeting where you involve everyone and you give a high level update, one is revenue. And if you are above, below goals, and maybe a reasoning why. One is insights from customer calls, why you may not succeed or succeed. What other high level points should be in there in your point of view?
I think every aspect of the go-to-market function, one, everyone needs to be aligned. So it's marketing. What are some of our marketing goals? How do we track against those goals? Those could be MQLs. It could be pipeline. I think marketing and sales should own pipeline. So it's the top of funnel all the way down, the sales activities. For example, the sales team needed to have 25 demos last month. We either achieved or didn't. Here's why. And then on the customer side, you're looking at retention and any insights. But I also think it's important, you know, everything could be rainbows and sunshine all the time, but I think it's important to also explain, okay, we lost this deal and here's our learnings, and this is how we're going to take that learning to help prevent it going forward. Or, you know, we lost a customer and here's why. I think if you look at that entire go-to-market function and what goals that they're tracking, is you share that with the whole company.
That's I buy into this. So I can tell you, we have a monthly cadence up to now, but we can try to do it like twice a month and just see what happens.
Yeah. I think it depends on your sales motion too. So, but it's important at least once a month.
Yeah. No, that's good. And we didn't, for example, share revenue up to now, to be honest. But let's see. Let's just try it. I mean, I'm up for being super open to everyone. And it's definitely not all rainbows. It's always like, I always say it's like a roller coaster that's up. Like in each week, there's something horrible happening and something great happening. And usually the average is going up.
So
I didn't consciously have it, but now that I think about it, I think we didn't do it, or I didn't do it, because I think or thought not everybody can stomach this roller coaster. That is absolutely normal for me as a founder, but people who are employed, and we don't only have, like, we also have like normal operations people, they could say, oh my God, this happened now. Do we have to find a new job now again, this week again? And, you know, this is maybe something that hindered me from opening up more. Not that I don't want to be transparent. I mean, I'm happy to share everything. It's more like, can they stomach this?
Right. But also having, it goes back to the why, right? So why are we here? What are we doing? What are our learnings? You can pivot. Okay. Our revenue is here and it might seem like doom and gloom, but this is why we're here. And this is what this is the stage we're at. This is actually pretty normal. So don't be afraid, but this is what we're doing from a go-to-market function to increase our revenue. and it also shouldn't necessarily be on the GTM. It should, so everyone in the company should feel like they're a part of getting it to that specific goal. So tying that into the conversation as well is important.
Yeah, that's really good. I give you feedback on how it works, Michelle.
Yeah.
If they are going to run away suddenly, oh my God, this company is tanking.
No, fortunately, we are doing
great, but that's going to be interesting.
Right?
So is there any important, like we talked about from founder, let's say, is to you have basically a repeatable sales motion and the whole sales team and you build up your VPs. Is there any important topic that we didn't cover up to now that you think we should cover in this conversation?
There's nothing I can think about right now. I think the biggest thing is making sure everyone's unified. It's a unified approach across the go-to-market motion. And we see a lot of silos. So I think making sure that everyone's aligned from a goals perspective, but also where are you going, right? So what is that long-term vision? Can everyone, especially on the leadership side, can they articulate that? I think that's really important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really good. And if you have silos as a startup, I mean, wait until you're bigger. It's going to be horrible.
It's going to be worse, yeah.
Yeah, so try to connect the dots and the people and have
exactly.
aligned goals makes absolute sense, yeah. So exactly. let's go a little bit more into the nitty-gritty tactical things where I have some tactical questions now. So
sure.
I understood. Helicopter view, check, all good. So in your point of view, what is a channel that is maybe underutilized by sales teams nowadays?
The phone. I think we got away from using the phone. And my reps who actually pick up the phone and they make cold calls, but they also use text messaging. Those are the successful reps. And cold calling kind of fizzled away for a little bit, depending on the motion and the sales leader. But we've saw a lot of success text messaging. I personally do not like to be text messaged, especially from a sales rep. That's my personal avenue of communication with friends and family. But I've had reps close deals right through text messages. And I think it's important also to understand, is this person okay with me texting them? Most people like it because they can just respond right then and there. Everyone's on their phone. We've sent contracts through text messaging, but makes it easier, like not going through emails and, you know, open, it's right there. But I think you have to build a little bit rapport first and understand, is it okay if I reach out? We did set next steps. They see the value. So you're good to go. But if it's someone that most likely will not take a text message as a positive thing, then don't do it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Very good. And it's also interesting that you on the one hand say very openly, I don't like to receive this,
yep.
But as a leader, you should still do it if your target persona in general is not absolutely negative towards trying this.
Yeah. Thing. Yeah. And I was anti and my reps, I never guided them to do that. But the ones who are eager and they'll hustle and they want to get that deal done, they're going to do everything possible. So at first I was a little thrown off by that and they started to see success. So who am I to say don't do it?
That opens up one new question. As a sales leader or like be it like as a founder, let's say it's in the beginning with the first two reps then or later as a sales leader, do you give your reps some room for experimentation?
Yes, absolutely. I learned that after many battles of trying to keep them in their lanes and trying to keep them follow this cadence, do this, do that. But if you don't allow them to experiment and try different things, and one, you don't know if it's going to work or not. Two, they're adults. They know what they need to do to hit their numbers. So if they want to try something that is way off base and potentially not build enough pipeline and close numbers, and we all know what's going to happen long term if they can keep doing that. But if they're willing to do it, I allow them to. I give them a pretty long leash. If you asked me 5 years ago, I would say absolutely not. But things have changed.
Yeah. And I mean, those people are, I mean, also the buyer personas change over time now.
Yes.
And you may not notice because you're used to this old buyer persona from the jobs you had. And well, people are responding to different kinds of channels and message types. So I buy into giving some room. Do you have a certain rule? Like, do you give some people absolute leeway and say, hey, you can do whatever you want? Or do you say 60, 70, 80% stick to what we agreed, 20% shoot and see what sticks?
Yeah, I think there's some guidelines. You won't be able to understand what works if what doesn't if everyone's doing something completely different. And I've had sales teams where, you know, 10 people were doing something completely different. We could never figure out what was repeatable or not. So giving them some type of narrow focus and guidelines that I want you to do this messaging, you know, need to customize the first three messages. I want you to send a video in your first, you know, four touches at some point, at least twice. Those are things that we knew worked. I didn't want them to steer away from that. Now, which way you send them videos, it can be entirely up to you. LinkedIn, text messaging, but you need to be able to create enough pipeline. And the messaging is usually pretty the same across the board.
Mm-hmm. I know this is maybe a tough question now, but I'm curious if you have like a range. What does usually a demo cost? So if you incorporate all the costs that you have for marketing, from sales, from salespeople reaching out, from all the steps, what I would be curious as a founder would be, okay, what does one demo cost? And then you can figure out, okay, conversion rate from demo to sales, so to say.
That's a tough question. I think it's different depending on the stage and your marketing funnel. You probably don't know really early on, but that goes back into the reason why you want to hire someone operations really fast. I don't have the right answer for that. It really just depends. I've been at companies that were straight PLG and it's low, right? But if you're an outbound organization, it's going to be high. And it's going to take a little bit longer to figure out that repeatable motion if it is just outbound. So it depends.
Mm-hmm. Okay, very good. I expected almost this number, but I wanted to, this like non-answer, so to say, but I wanted to ask anyway. what are other ways of acquiring leads that right now work well, what you see in the market?
I think it depends on the persona, but podcasts work, webinars work a lot if it's geared towards that specific persona. And you understand the value that they're going to get out of it. So let's see, if it's a VP of sales persona, you're targeting VP of sales and you're focusing on a specific topic that you know is going to resonate with them. For example, compensation plans. How do you create a compensation plan that incentivizes the team? What are some different ways? So that's something that I'd be interested in as a VP of sales. Knowing
so listen that, up if you want Michelle on a sales call, this is what you have to invite her to.
yeah, exactly. So it's those chunks of information that people don't necessarily get all the time.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And what is a process for, okay, you invite them to a webinar, you have a good topic, they attend. How do you convert them to leads afterwards?
Yeah, I would make sure that marketing is working very closely with the sales team to understand this is what the topic was. These are the key players that attended. And then making sure that you and the sales team are in line with the messaging and the cadence and tying the messaging back to something that's relevant to the topic. And also giving them something of value in that follow-up. It's not just, hey, you attended this webinar. It's tailored to that specific title, persona, the webinar value, and you can typically see some conversion there as opposed to an automated message that just runs that is not tailored to that specific person. I think it's really important just to be aligned with marketing and sales on messaging.
Mm-hmm. I have to ask again about some numbers here. Let's see if you can provide some here. So what would be a good conversion rate from webinar to sales call or also compared to cold outbound, so to say, conversion to a first demo or conversation at least?
I would say about 30% early on.
That's good. That's good. Wow. That's much higher than, so webinar 30%.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. And at cold outbound?
Outbound, you could see you'd want a pretty decent ratio between number of outbound touches to demo. So I typically dig deep in how many actual touches it took to each and how many titles, but I'd say anywhere between 40 to 50%. It could be higher early on, but it will be higher early on.
Just to let it understand correctly, if the team approaches, let's stick with the VP of sales, 10 VPs of sales, they should convert 4 to 5 of those to a call.
It depends on inbound or outbound.
Outbound.
Outbound, I would say 2 to 3.
Okay, but that's still much higher than I usually saw. So what I hear most often is like if you convert 1 to 2%, then you're already good, and you're like 10 times higher than that. So that's really good. That's interesting. What else do we have? Podcast.
I think the key there is early. It is higher because you're trying to figure it out. But once you get that repeatable motion, you know, you've narrowed it down. You've narrowed the scope down. You know what messaging resonates, what messaging works, and making sure that you're providing the team the right people to contact to. If they're spending hours on, like, there's a lot that goes into it, right? Hours to understand the persona, hours to understand the messaging. That's a wash. But once you're a pretty well-oiled machine, it's a lot better.
Okay, that sounds promising.
It's not easy.
No, I understand it's a lot of work and like a bigger team then that has to support you and all that. But that's like the promised land if you get there. That sounds really cool.
Yeah.
And you mentioned podcasts. How do you leverage podcasts?
Same thing. So making sure that they understand the topic, that the value to the persona that you're speaking to resonates with your core persona that, you know, ICP. And it's very same model where you're working with marketing. They understand who's attending or who is on there, the type of people that are going to be listening. But typically it's a branded thing. It's more on marketing. You're talking more specifically about your organization and the value, and you see leads from that lead source that are listening, that are coming in.
So it's more a podcast about your own company where you disclose some values, some use cases, or how can I imagine what's a podcast for you then?
Yeah. So it typically would be a sponsored podcast with a partner, and you know, you have your brand, your logo somewhere on the podcast, and you're not necessarily, you have the ability to pitch your company, but you're not necessarily focusing on your specific company. No one wants to listen to a sales pitch, right? You want to discuss a topic that your product or your services can actually help with. Mm-hmm. So if you're a quota tool, your topic of podcast is how to set a proper quota for sales reps and something along those lines.
Yeah. Now I understand also why I receive like at least once a day or twice a day a recommendation for a guest on our show.
Yeah.
this makes absolute sense. It makes sense to place people in the right shows then.
Yeah, exactly. Yep.
Okay, very good. So we are already at the end of our conversation, Michelle, and I have 5 rapid fire questions to wrap it up with you. Are you ready?
I'm ready. Let's do it.
Let's do it. What do you do to keep body and mind fit and sharp?
I work out every day, every single day. I'm on the Peloton probably 5 days a week. And those other days, hiking with my kids and dog, we're always, always active.
Very cool. How old are your kids, if I may ask?
2 and 4.
Very
cool. So they keep me busy too.
yeah, definitely. Do you have a favorite business book?
Start with why. Mm-hmm. I think I probably even said bring it back to the why 50 times today.
More than once, yeah. Yeah, very good. Do you have a favorite podcast that you regularly listen to?
Business, I listen to the Product-Led Growth podcast. Mm-hmm. Yeah. They cover a good amount of different topics.
That's interesting. I don't know it. I would check it out. And of course, we also put both the book and the podcast in the show notes. Of course, the links also to your company page. Needless to say that. who should be our next Grow B2B Faster podcast guest and why?
I think my previous director of BDRs, Saad Khan, he built out the sales or the BDR team and is an expert in BDR cadences, build BDR profiles, hiring, setting their day in the life. And in order to grow, you need to understand when that person is to hire, and what that motion looks like to get it successful.
Sounds like a very interesting guest. I will reach out to him and ask. And now you can directly address our audience, Michelle. Is there anything we can help you with?
That's a great question. If you are a first-time founder, or you're just having trouble thinking about a go-to-market motion, feel free to reach out. You can find me on LinkedIn, Shell Peach at Mind at Light Consulting, and I'd be happy to just hop on a call.
Perfect. So it's Michelle with a double L and P-I-E-T-S-C-H. Of course, also put it in the show notes, but for the people listening just to the podcast, that's how you find Michelle. It was a true pleasure.
Perfect.
I can take along a lot of stuff for our company, and I'm sure other people as well. So thanks a lot for being our guest, Michelle.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Awesome.
If you liked the show, please leave us a rating and subscribe to our podcast to never miss a new episode. Do you want to grow your B2B business, win new employees, and drive sales with a podcast content engine? Sawoo can help. Simply schedule a strategy call with our host, Sammy Gebele. Get in touch on LinkedIn or via sawoo.io, S-A-W-O-O.io. You can also find all contact details in our show notes. Thanks, and see you next time.